This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Hello, John Lamb.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning particularly to gardeners. They've got their notebooks handy. They're waiting for Darren Ray, our climatologist, our consulting climatologist here in South Australia. And in about half an hour's time, Darren will be providing a three-month weather outlook for home gardeners. And in particular, will it rain? And of course, it's going to rain. So when is it going to rain? How much? And are we going to go from very, very dry to very, very wet? But that'll be later in the program. It happens to be this week is going to be International Compost Week. So what do you say? Well, the people involved with compost and promoting gardeners using compost are suggesting that compost could be a climate action solution. And we'll talk to one of our top organic people, Tim Marshall, very, very, very shortly. Mm-hmm. But that'll be shortly in this morning's program.
It sure will. And also we're taking your calls. So if you've got a question for John, call in on 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891, and you can join the queue here for Talkback Gardening. We'd love to hear from you this morning. If you've got a comment to make, we always love receiving them on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. John, some big news this week for the People's Choice Rose winner in the National Trial Garden we are lucky enough to have here at the Botanic Gardens in Adelaide.
Yes, there's a great deal of interest in roses. We are the rose capital of Australia, and we are very fortunate that we have the National Rose Trial Gardens in the Botanic Gardens, and they test new roses before they actually become commercial roses and available to the public, and they are trialled over a two-year period, and the roses that come out with gold medals usually are the ones that you'll buy in your garden centres later on. But during the trial, the people that run the National Trial Gardens, they invite the people to come along for the People's Choice Rose. And that was about just over a week ago, and the people have spoken. And the rose is a delightful bush rose, strong, very vigorous, very disease resistant. But the important thing is it has wonderful fragrance.
I like the perfume of a rose.
Yes, and at this stage, it doesn't have a name. It hasn't. It's got a number, which is the trial number. But my understanding, and I may be correct, but my understanding is that the rose was entered into the trial by Wagner's Roses. They're the rose nursery down the southeast, and they, I think, are going to call the rose Emily Bronte. Emily Bronte. So the people's choice could be Emily Bronte, but it's a lovely open rose with, I think it's a yellowy kind of a petals, but it's got this brilliant fragrance. And the interesting thing, Deb, is that each year there's a people's rose, and it's the fragrance is the dominant factor. And often, from a commercial point of view, it's overlooked in terms of its shape, or maybe there are other factors there that that the commercial people put the weight on. But the people are saying, fragrance, 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 make sure it's got fragrance.
Exactly, which I absolutely love as well. We'll have a quick chat to Josh in Para Hills, who's got a question about one of your favourite trees. John, good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Deb and John. Thank you for taking my call. When I moved into my house, there is the previous owners planted a hedgerow of crepe myrtles, and they're getting quite tall, and I keep getting letters from the neighbours saying that the flowers are damaging their outdoor furniture and that, and I want to cut it below fence line to stop these letters. When's the good time to do that?
Probably winter. And the nice thing about a crepe myrtle is that they are very forgiving, and they don't mind being cut back quite hard. Many years ago, people would get their crepe myrtles, and in winter it just became tradition. You would prune and you would cut them back almost to little stumps. And the harder you cut them back, the more vigorous your growth, which, of course, is what happens with your fruit trees. Prune them back hard, they come out with strong growth. Now, and the reason why you cut them back hard in winter is because they come out with strong new growth, but the flowers are produced on the strong new growth. So the more strong strong new growth you get, the more flowers you get. So that comes down to within shape. So some people are suggesting that maybe they've got a lovely shape during winter anyway. Don't cut them back too hard, they'll still flower. And probably there's a compromise between saying, right, I've got a basic framework, and what I'll do is those main branches, I'll leave those alone, but it's the side branches, they'll cut back those quite hard. So you get lots of new side branches with not your flowers. But come back to your particular thing, Josh. You're saying you want to actually reduce its size.
I used it as a tree screen for privacy, but I keep getting these letters about the flowers. So I just want to cut it below the fence line just to stop the harassment.
Well, I would suggest that you do what we were suggesting from a fruit tree point of view. Don't cut it back too hard now. Yep. If you want to get the size down, cut it back very hard, but you'll have to do that after flowering. But to keep the neighbours happy, I'd be suggesting that you do. Come back probably no more than about 20%. Cut your main branches back by 20%, and if you can, that may be sort of as round about fence height anyway. But I would suggest that if you wait till after flowering and then cut it back even harder than you're going to cut it back now or during winter, and that will give you an opportunity, because when you cut it, it's going to produce more growth and it'll come back over the top of the fence again. If you cut it below the fence in summer, the new growth will appear, and it'll take maybe a couple of seasons before it gets up to being annoying again.
That's great, thanks. Yeah, the bees have left, so it might be a good time to start cutting.
So long as it's not producing new growth. And the fact that the soil temperatures have dropped so dramatically, 13 degrees is not going to stimulate very much growth, even in ornamental plants, or particularly in ornamental plants that like warm weather.
Outstanding. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Josh. Lovely to hear from you. If you would like to call in, and if you've got a compost question, now might be the time to do it. The number is 1300 222 891. We are going to speak to Tim Marshall, our Organic Gardening Authority, ahead of International Compost Awareness Week next.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Great to be with you on this first weekend in May, talking compost, John.
Yes, we're going to put the focus on compost because International Compost Awareness Week is next week. And as a gardener, well, that's pretty important. If it's not a gardener, you're probably saying, ho-hum. But it could be that there's a link between compost and climate change. And Deb, you and I received a media release from the composting type people suggesting that compost is a climate action solution.
That's right.
Fascinating. But what is the connection? And I thought the person who could really explain that very simply and with understanding is Tim Marshall, who happens to be the person in charge of NASA, the National Association for Sustainable Agriculture. But he has also set the standards for agricultural organics, and he's also a regular on Talkback Gardening. Good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, John and Deb.
The important thing is, what's the connection between compost, or is there a connection between compost and climate change?
Well, the first thing to do is to make sure that we get organic material out of landfill, because when it's in landfill, it produces methane, which is a powerful climate-changing gas. The next thing to do is to learn how to compost well. Organic material left on the surface will return most of the nutrients to the soil, but the things that are lost are the volatile gases, and that will be some nitrogen and carbon dioxide. But the better we get at composting, the less escape of those materials we will have. I guess another reason is that if we rely on a compost for our main requirement for nutrients, then we may need to buy some bagged minerals. But if we can reduce our reliance on fertilisers of that nature, then obviously they need to be mined and that's an energy intensive process. So we're using less energy to supply the nutrients that we can just recycle from our garden waste and kitchen waste.
Yes, and of course with an artificial fertiliser, particularly a nitrogen type fertiliser, a lot of it's volatile and would disappear up into the air.
You're very lucky if you can get 50% of the nitrogen from that bag fertiliser into your soil and plants to remain. So yes, best to reduce our reliance on that. And I guess the other thing is that the effect of compost on the soil is going to make those soils a bit more resilient to the effects of climate change. For instance, the much of Australia might have some problems with changed water regimes, our normal cycle of droughts. And if we fill our soils with organic matter, then we can become much more able to store whatever moisture we have, to retain that moisture. That's, of course, to the benefit of our plants.
During winter, many gardeners are going to be putting in aged animal manure or putting animal manures into the soil. What's the effect there? Do we get gases coming off to the animal manures as they're broken down by the little biotas?
Yes. Look, if they're aged manures, they're much better than fresh manures. Composting still remains a better alternative, and some of the bagged manures that you can get will be pre-composted a little bit. If you're just getting it from a stable, then a bit less so. So importantly there, that over time, as the soils get better, they will handle those materials better. Do cover them with a mulch if possible. Maybe tickle them just into the soil surface. You don't need to dig them in deeply.
We're speaking to Tim Marshall, our Organic Gardening Authority, about compost. If you've got a composting question, jump in now. We don't have Tim for very long. The phone line is 1300 222 891.
Tim, the soil here in South Australia, you're up in Townsville at the moment, I understand it's probably pretty wet up there, but South Australia, we've only had 15 millimetres of rain in the last 3 months. Bone dry in the topsoil and even the subsoil in many gardens is very, very dry. So last time you spoke, you sort of said the soil is alive with microbes, and probably two-thirds of the carbon that ends up in the soil comes from the little biotas. They are tremendously important, but the soil is so dry. Could you explain what's happening to the little biotas in dry soil?
Well, they're not going away. They may slow down, and they may even put themselves to sleep for a little while, but they will remain. And when rain comes back or irrigation comes back, they will survive. So they're less active, but they're still in place.
Okay, so that's good news. There are a lot of autumn leaves on the ground at the moment, and because it's so dry in many areas, the leaves are dropping prematurely. They're on the ground at the moment, and if we do nothing, they'll blow away into the waterways and cause pollution problems. How effective are those autumn leaves? I mean, there's not much left in a leaf, I presume. How important are those leaves if you actually do make them into a compost? Are they valuable, or are they just we're just preventing a pollution problem?
No, they are valuable. You're correct that a lot of the nutrients have been removed by the tree before the leaf falls and stored in the twigs and then down in the roots so that they can be used next year. But what remains is carbon. So that carbon is valuable. And because I live at Stirling, I have access to a lot of those leaves, and I make a specific leaf mould compost. But those leaves can be added to any other compost, and they're valuable. The problem at the moment is that because it's dry, they will be blowing away, and that can be a bit annoying. And if they end up in gutters, then they get into creeks, and that is not good.
Well, they are liquid gold if we harness them, aren't they, Tim?
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us ahead of International Compost Awareness Week. It starts tomorrow. Always great to catch up with you, Tim. Next time you're in Adelaide, let us know. We'll have you in the studio.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tim Marshall, Organic Gardening Authority. And John, very deeply involved in sustainability nationally, isn't he?
Tim has been, I think, a tremendous force in the world of organics. We go back 40 or 50 years ago, Peter Bennett was the person who was talking a lot about organics. But at that stage, Peter was rubbished and people were sort of saying, oh, organics and compost, ho-hum. Mm-hmm. But since then, we have learnt what's going on in the compost heap, and the scientists have been able to come together and examine and come up with sensible information. And Tim has been one of those people that's been, as a scientist and also organic, putting the science behind the philosophy, I think, is what has made organics what it is today. And Tim has been very, very responsible and influential, played
that.
A big role in that.
Yeah. We are going Talkback Gardening, so if you've got a Talkback Gardening question for John, call in right now. The number is 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. You will get ahead in the queue if you do that. Peter says on the text line, I'm waiting eagerly to hear Darren Ray to set my strategy for this year's crop seeding. Yeah. We'll be speaking to Darren Ray after the 9 o'clock news, but now is the time to call in on 1300 222 891 if you would like to ask John a question. Now, John, just a question from Caroline on the text line is talking about dogs, one a Dalmatian and an Australian Border Force puppy. What plants are good to plant that are resistant to dogs digging up? Now, I ring you every week and we have a chat, and I often hear your gorgeous doggy in the background. But is there such a thing as a dog-resistant plant?
To me, the solution is training the dog not to. And that comes down to your ability to be able to train the dog. And most dogs can be trained very, very easily. Usually food is the thing that will do it. So if you're not too sure, there are plenty of books. There are wonderful things, YouTubes and things like that, that show you how you can actually train the dog to stop barking or to do this or not do that. And some of the YouTubes are brilliant. You can see these dogs doing all these amazing tricks. How do they do it? They just do it by training. Yeah. So, I mean, if you want your dog to defecate in a particular spot, you give them encouragement to do it, they'll do it. And so if they are going to get stuck into the garden, you need some protection. You know, and I've had that problem with many a corgi simple little wire fences. They only need to be sort of 10 centimetres, 15 centimetres high. That green flexible wire is brilliant. You just put a little guard around it and then you start your training. And when they go in there, you get them away from there. And when they come away from there, they are rewarded for their action. And they soon get the message, oh, I don't go into that little area beyond the fence. And then you can take the fence down, there's no longer a problem.
Yeah, and it comes back to time though, doesn't it? In modern society, and that it's the same with gardening. You know, people have to find that time to train their dog and to get out into the gardening. I know that I have that problem myself with both the dog and the garden.
Oh, and the dogs love it. I mean, they are stuck home. You might be home with it, but I mean, they're sitting there most of the day. They just long for activity and attention, and they will share the activity with you if you let them.
Yes, wonderful. Now, also on the text line, I live on the Eyre Peninsula, haven't had much rain. I have a Sturt's Desert Pea, which is still alive but has some dead leaves. I haven't watered it, but wondering, do I need to, or should I just leave it alone to do its own thing?
If the soil is very, very, very dry, and they respond to moisture, and they won't grow in very dry soil. You'll find that they grow in little depressed areas where it's usually sort of fairly heavier soil, and the moisture will stay there much longer than the surrounding areas. But so you learn from that, having a bit of a basin around your plants. And don't overwater them, but when you do water them, you give them a good soaking. So the simple answer is, yeah, make a bit of a basin underneath the canopy, and then put in, I would be putting on maybe 4 or 5 litres of water, nothing else with it, just the water, give it a good soaking, and then leave it alone for at least, you know, hopefully it's going to rain soon. And Darren Ray will be along shortly to either confirm or deny that.
Exactly. So stay tuned for that. A thank you to Mary at Cuddly Creek that says, thank you for acknowledging Peter Bennett. I did a course with Peter on organic gardening and it was brilliant. It changed the way I garden. Loved another course with Tim Marshall in his Adelaide Hills garden. Such an impact.
Brilliant, yes. And there are people that are out there. I mean, so what Sophie Thompson is doing at the moment is very much like what Peter Bennett was doing 20 or 30 years ago. And I can remember when I first started doing talkback gardening, Peter Bennett was an essential person. And we would pretend to be fighting each other and having arguments. And people would write and they'd ring up the ABC and complain, rotten John Lamb, how dare they argue? And other people would ring up and, with that awful Peter Bennett, what does he know what he's talking about? It was fun time on radio, and we've changed a lot. But I think to me, Soph is the modern Peter Bennett.
Well, that's right. And you can catch Sophie live tomorrow at Stangate Garden. Yeah, I think that's where Spence is broadcasting from.
Yes.
Live from 10 until 12, celebrating the colour of autumn in the Adelaide Hills.
Earlier on, you were talking about Mum's Day.
Yes.
And of course, many people are saying, oh, okay, Mums, what we're going to do? Give Mum a living plant. I think you can't do anything better. Rather than a bunch of plants, which bunch of flowers, which is going to last probably a short period, a living plant, even if it's chrysanthemums, particularly if it's chrysanthemums, and probably the best bet in terms of long-term flowers would have to be cyclamen. You buy a cyclamen and flower now, it'll still be flowering probably in September, October.
Gorgeous. So give something that's going to last a bit longer. Sarah from Kaipo has called in on 1300 888 291. Good morning and welcome, Sarah.
Good morning. I've just got a quick question. I've got lots of black panthers, dried heads of the flowers, and lots of seeds. I'm wondering if I can successfully propagate those plants.
You should be able to, yeah. They're normal, wild, almost wild agapanthus, the one that's been around for a long, long time. They drop their seeds and they are fairly... they germinate pretty readily. The more breeding you get into them, they become hybrid, and the less viable the seeds will be. What I would suggest is you have a go, and you may put in, say, 50 seeds, and you might only get 10 plants, but that's 10 plants, and you don't need too many aggies anyway to get going. So
how would you do it?
How do you do it? Righto. Well, you've collected the seeds and keep them nice and dry, and then I would be suggesting you could try, if you've got plenty of seeds...
Oh, lots.
Okay, righto. We'll try some now. Get some good quality seed raiding mix. It'll be dry if it's in a packet. Get it just moist, not soggy wet. Get it just moist. Put it into your container. Yeah, put your seeds and cover them with maybe about a centimetre of your seed raising mix. And then put it somewhere where it's... in a protected position, it doesn't sort of get too much sun on it, doesn't dry out is the important thing. So put it under the patio or somewhere like that so that the soil just stays moist, and you'll find that probably by maybe mid-spring you'll start to see it germinate. Now, you'd use half your seed now, and probably the other half I'd be doing that towards the end of winter, early springtime. And exactly the thing. Put it into good seed raiding mix. And the important thing is just keep it just moist, but not soggy wet. If you do, it'll go. it'll get little root rots and you'll be pretty disappointed. But, great fun.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Good luck with it. Thanks for the call. We'll take more of your calls after 9 o'clock this morning. Coming back to dogs, Dave says, I use positive reinforcement training and now my dog poops in a certain part of the yard, just as you said, John.
Yeah, it's common sense. And people that have got problems with their dogs in particular, I would encourage you to get a good book on training. If you have a good vet, ask the vet for a good book on dogs, training dogs. You can also ask the vet about training clubs, and there are people football organisations that just run training clubs for basics. The earlier you can get to the dog and train it, the better.
Yes.
But you can still train an older dog. And then, as I mentioned, what's on the web is brilliant.
I thought you can't teach an old dog new tricks, John.
Had to get that one in.
Jackie at West Croydon says, I have my typing fingers ready to take notes from Darren Ray's forecast to send to my dear mum, and so I can review them myself. Well, stay tuned, because it's not very far away.
Yes, and there are just so many farmers at the moment. They are very, very concerned. They're waiting for that rain. It's the break in the season is not yet. It is late, and they want to know exactly what's going to happen.
Yes, so do stay tuned for Darren Ray's seasonal outlook for gardeners. We'll also have time for more talkback gardening calls. I'll give you the numbers again. 1300 222 891. You can call and get yourself in the queue. And we do love to look at your comments on the text line. That number is 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning, the 4th of May. May the 4th be with you. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, gardeners, particularly gardeners that are sitting there waiting and wondering, when is it going to rain? And how long before we get a good soaking rain? And what about those international weather models that are suggesting, some are suggesting that perhaps it's going to stay dry. Others are saying, no, no, it's going to be wet. But nearly all of them are saying it's going to be a wet late spring and maybe even longer. La Nina comes into the picture. So how is it going to go from so dry to so wet? The person that can explain that, and will do that very, very succinctly, is Darren Ray, our independent climatologist here in South Australia. He provides a wonderful three-month weather outlook, and he'll be doing that very, very, very shortly.
He will do that indeed. Then we'll pick up general talkback gardening questions. So if you've got a question and you would like to jump in the queue, call in now on 1300 222 891. We love your comments on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away this half hour as well, one by phone and one by text, so you can get yourself prepared for that by typing your name and address into your text message and then wait for the queue to send it through on 0467 922 891. John, it's that time. It's the first weekend of the new month of May.
A lot of people anticipate what Darren is going to say, but as we move into autumn and autumn turns out to be dry and we haven't had that break in the season, there is so many people saying, we want to know exactly what's going on. The person who's going to help us with that, of course, is Darren Ray. Good morning to you, Darren.
Konnichiwa.
Okay, you're a force man.
I can go international, John.
Oh, well, there we are. Almost, but listen, 15 millimetres of rain in the last 3 months. The ground is extremely dry. The gardens are desperate for good soaking rain. You have been suggesting, or in fact, we go back to Christmas time. You were saying we're in for an Indian summer. Could be good gardening weather. Spot on there. A couple of months ago, you said maybe it's going to stay dry, but we could get some moisture, some showery weather coming through in May. Well, Darren, it's now May. So before I ask you to answer that question, is it going to rain in May, could you just focus very quickly and briefly on the main system that's affecting our weather at the moment, and that will set the scene.
Yeah, so the main, well, there's a few things going on, but the really, the major thing is we're seeing this sort of local variations in the ocean temperatures as the El Nino event that we saw over summer breaks down. So it's the pattern with if we look back at the ocean temperatures at the surface a few months ago, you know, in El Nino events, you see that big warm plume of water at the surface along the tropics out in the central eastern Pacific, and it's cooler than average in the western Pacific. Essentially, what we're seeing is this sort of translation of that. That pattern, the sort of cooler water, is making its way past Indonesia and off to the northwest of Australia. And then there's the warm water behind it is now moving into the Western Pacific. We're also seeing the early signs in the underneath the ocean surface of the La Nina cooler water coming to the surface in the far eastern Pacific. So this is basically this translation of ocean temperatures from the El Nino that are moving through. And what that's doing, John, is it's really, we're seeing very warm temperatures out in the far sort of western Indian Ocean, and that cooler water that's made its way through is sitting off the northeast. And we're setting up this, what's actually looks like a bit of a sort of positive ID pattern a little bit. So it actually tends to set up a circulation that suppresses the rainfall. So that's putting a bit of lid on things at the moment. You know, the convections in the tropics are just in the wrong place in terms of feeding into the mid-latitude weather systems to produce rain over us.
Yeah, okay. So in simpler forms, we've had cool waters to the north of Australia, and that's when you've got cool water, you don't get evaporation, you don't get the rainfall. But then out in the Pacific, you've got the warm water. The warm water is coming towards Australia, and it's pushing the cold or the cool water out into the Indian Ocean, and that's going to be replaced with warm waters to the north of Australia. And if we get warm waters to the north of Australia, that gives us the potential for rain.
Yeah, and it'll break down that pattern that we're seeing at the moment. It's putting a bit of a lid on rainfall. So we've had some sort of short bursts of tropical activity trying to produce some rain, and you know, there's some moisture over the next week or so that if we had the right sort of system sitting over southern Australia, we could actually do something. But it's all it's not coming together properly right at the moment.
Okay, so let's take a look at May, week by week if we need be. But you're suggesting there is a potential for a system to actually drop some moisture on South Australia. At what stage of the month, and how significant might it be?
Well, essentially what I'm seeing is, so last time we spoke, there's been some indications that sort of second week of May might start kicking off. It's actually looking like it's slowed down a little bit and switching more into the sort of third week and fourth week of May. So essentially the next 2 weeks look pretty beautiful. I mean, beautiful gardening weather, John. Just, you know, this sort of wonderful low 20s days where it's, and sunny when it's a pleasure to be out in the garden doing stuff, just not much in the way of rainfall. Over the next 2 weeks.
Third and fourth week, people want to focus on that.
Yeah,
is it going to be a system that goes right across the state, or is it just going to be showery weather?
No, it just looks like that sort of pattern with the sort of high-pressure system sitting in the bight will break down a bit, and we'll start seeing more of a sort of westerlies, cold frontal stuff coming through from around the sort of 15th, 16th of May. And that'll start to add up some rainfall over the southern parts, southern coastal regions of the state. So, unfortunately, it's not looking like a really strong signal, but just...
Not a big break in the season.
More.
So by the end of May, how many millimetres of rain might we get, do you reckon?
Well, it does look like it ramps up in the as we go towards the end of the month, so more so in the last week of May. But I still looking like we'll end up for Adelaide, I'll stress, probably still a little bit below average.
Average rainfall for Adelaide is 68 millimetres for May.
Yeah.
So, we're not going to get that.
I suspect we'll probably be lucky to get 40, 50 millimetres. And unfortunately, even further inland, so, you know, away from the coast, it'll probably be even drier, and I'm sure there's not, a lot of people not wanting to hear that, but... that's really what we're seeing at the moment. It's really just taking its time. Got a bit of lid on things over the next sort of couple of months.
All right, so extreme weather coming through in week three and four in May. Temperatures?
So, yeah, you could press repeat on this sort of low 20s days over the next 2 weeks, and then sort of more into that sort of high teens and variable temperatures through the second half of the month. It'll probably end up being a little bit warmer than average with this sort of run of temperatures we're seeing at the moment and over the next week or so. And then, cooler, a little bit milder the second half of the month.
All right, so take us into June.
So June, it does look like things ramp up a little bit, you know, sort of there's a bit more support for rainfall and the that sort of, you know, colder stream showers sort of stuff coming through. So particularly for the first half of June, looks pretty reasonable. And I suspect it'll still struggle to get to average rainfall. We've still got that sort of pattern with this sort of cooler off to the northwest things sitting there for over the next sort of couple of months. So it's going to take a little while to break down ahead of the, you know, the sort of La Nina single coming in later in the year.
Darren, I can hear farmers to the north of Jamestown saying, righto, we might get stream activity across the southern region, and even though it won't break the bank in terms of rainfall, there'll be rainfall, good moisture, to the north of the agricultural areas. What's the likelihood of them getting reasonable rain?
It's... Like I said, there is a bit of a lid on things, and it's going to be a really tricky season, I think, for farmers to get their crops away, unfortunately. I mean, as you've alluded to, John, it will switch around as we go through towards the end of winter and into spring. But, the next couple of months look like they're going to be a bit tricky.
Okay, so stream activity in May and June. Hopefully July will be wet.
Yes, you would hope for that. The modelling suggests otherwise. It does look like it switches off a little bit in July in the modelling.
That's not good.
Yeah. So that still that signal kicking in there. So it does look a bit dry, and you know, temperature's a bit on the warm side. Lots of sunshine, and you know, under usually warm conditions for winter. August it starts to switch around a bit, John, so we do start seeing that sort of breakdown of this sort of warm water that's in the West Pacific at the moment has translated off to the northwest, and we start seeing a situation that's more conducive for rainfall.
Aha, so that warm water that's out there and to the east of Australia and dropping all the moisture down the eastern coast, it finally works its way across to the north of Australia, and that is slow, and as it moves in, it's going to increase the likelihood of showers.
So it's a really interesting one. Like, the pattern starts off looking a bit like a positive ID, which is dry, and then it'll switch over to something that's much more negative in the ocean dipole. So that warm water off to the to northwest of Australia, and with, you know, it does look like those ocean temperatures will get pretty warm around Australia in the second half of the year.
Okay, and warm waters around Australia means potential for showers.
Yeah. Okay. So certainly looks like it'll be some self-support there for some.
So take us into springtime. So it's not going to be over wet during winter. Springtime, I mean, some of the international models are saying wet, 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 La Nina.
Yeah, absolutely. So
are you saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. As I touched on earlier, there's some cool water that's been sitting under the surface out in the eastern Pacific, and that's starting to come to the surface now, and that's setting up the early stages of a La Nina event. And so we're very likely to see that develop over the next few months out in the eastern Pacific. But it'll take a few months for that to kick in, and you know, that sort of warm water out the western Pacific to move through as well. So it's looking very much on the cards. It's a pretty strong signal, and there's lots of stuff sitting in there under the surface. So,
they say all things come to those that wait.
Yeah, I don't know that that's the news that Peter, who had his pen out ready to eagerly hear you for his strategy for crop seeding, is going to be very happy with that, Darren. But can I just summarise what you had to say? So May, below average rainfall, our average, John, 68 millimetres, and you're saying we're lucky to get 40 to 50, Darren, in the third and fourth weeks.
Yep.
Very dry inland. Temperature, you're saying, is that above or below average?
Overall above. Right. As I say, that'll be the first half of the month.
Okay.
With cold nights?
Clear, cool nights, yeah. Okay. We're not seeing the sort of really that cold air mass coming up. I mean, the cold air masses coming up from the south will be more in the second half of the month. So it's, cooler nights, but not particularly frosty, I don't think.
Okay, and June, likely below average rainfall. There is a bit of chance of rain in the first half of the month. Very tricky for farmers, unfortunately, and for July, you're saying below average rainfall, again, above average temperatures, and that wet spring La Nina impact have to wait until at least August in spring.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, beautiful gardening weather, and great to be out, just, you know, a bit hard if you're looking for rainfall and water.
Let's take a look at that. So if we take a look at June, we should get 72 millimetres, July 66, August 62, and September about 51. and so it's going to be below that until springtime, and then it could change quite significantly. Darren, it's very good of you to analyse the situation and put it into farmer language and also to home garden language.
Darren, as always, can't thank you enough for joining us on the first weekend of the month. Not what people want to hear. We're getting texts saying boo-hoo for the farmers, not what I wanted to hear. A forecast, very tough year for livestock. So, you know, we can only hope they are models. Let's hope that there is, you know, some rain to come, but certainly not sounding fantastic over the months of winter. Darren, thanks very much for joining us as always.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Thank you. Darren Ray, our wonderful consulting climatologist, joins us the first weekend of every month with his seasonal outlook for gardeners. And Clint on the text line says, no showers in the week's forecast. Still, I'm going to have a shower to remind myself what it was like to get caught in the rain. Clint, thank you very much for that. We're coming to your calls next. If you've got a call for John, jump in on 1300 222 891.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
If you've got a question for John, call in now on 1300 222 891. Only got a few minutes of Talk Back Gardening left, and I know John would love to help you. Sally in Erbray has done that. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Deb and John. My question is about removing Kikuyu lawn. I have a garden bed about 5 metres by 3 metres that's all Kikuyu, and I want to change it to a native garden bed. And I'm wondering if the best way to get rid of the Kikuyu is to poison it.
Absolutely. Yes, probably the only chemical that will really give you the answer you want is the glyphosate-type sprays.
Yes,
And if you put them on according to the directions, you're not going to end the world. People sort of get so upset when I mention the word glyphosate. From a gardening point of view, they're only used rarely and they are used in small locations. It's not the problem. The big problem might be out there, but that's not the issue of the day. So if you spray now, make sure that the soil is wet. So I'll be giving it a good soak this weekend and spraying next weekend. And it because the ground is now slow, you'll find that the Kikuyu will sort of look as though nothing's happening, and it will take maybe 4 to 6 weeks for the chemical to get down into the roots and kill them off. So a good spray now, and then wait until springtime or late winter, and just see whether there's any new little pieces. In fact, I'd be cultivating the soil a little bit and just seeing whether there are any live roots there. And if you do a good job now, you'll probably knock out probably 99%, but there'll be a few left, and that's when you can spot spray. You don't have to spray everything, just have a nice little spot spray on any little section that you see that comes up, and I think that will solve your problem. It's a very effective chemical when used correctly.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much for that.
Thanks for the call, Sally. Lovely to hear from you. Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb. 1-300-222-891 is the number. Now, earlier, John, we were speaking about organic gardening and you mentioned Peter Bennett. Another text from Wendy has come through saying, thank you for recognising him. Peter Bennett was often ridiculed in his own lifetime. He would now be mainstream. Such a shame the way he was treated. It's funny, isn't it, how things change?
Peter wrote a brilliant book on organic gardening, well and truly out of print, but I'm sure if you went to a good library should still have a copy of Peter Bennett's Organic Gardening. Go and have a read of it. You will be amazed at what he is saying, which is now being mainstream and trendy, but he was saying it 40 years ago, and he was saying it on Talk Back Gardening.
A man ahead of his time. Sue is in Seacliff and has a potato question. Good morning, Sue.
Oh, good morning. I'd just like to ask, John talked earlier about seed potatoes.
Yes.
I have seed potatoes that don't have any sprouts at all, so I'm wondering, should I still keep them in the dark like you recommended the previous caller, or put them out in the sunshine to try and get them sprouting?
No, you need them as dormant as possible until you're ready. So the fact that the eyes are there, they're just, you can't see them, they're dormant, they're underneath the skin. Leave them alone, keep them dark, keep them nice and dry, and when you're ready, late winter, probably maybe middle of August, you take them out, expose them to light, not sunlight, good strong light, don't get them over wet, and you're up and away.
So could I actually, if I wanted to plant them sort of sooner rather than that, like straight away, do I put them in light now?
You could, but be very careful of frost. Where are you? Are you going to put them in the ground or in containers?
In containers.
Righto. Well, if you can keep the containers, put them in, they will start to grow and you're ahead. You're getting a root system established and it's not going to grow much, but it's in a root system and it'll get you going early in springtime. The important thing is just keep the soil on the relatively warm side, if you possibly can, and keep it out of rain, and on a frosty night, grab the container and stick it on a shelf so that the container is probably a metre off the ground. So if there's frost on the ground, it's not going to get up a metre high.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. And I've got some peas as well that are sprouting.
Oh, good.
Does the sprout, do you put a little sprout on underneath on the soil, like sprout going down or above?
Which way?
Yeah, okay. Be very, very careful. The root system is very, very soft and brittle. It'll break very, very quickly. And if you mess them up, you're going to set your plants back. I think it's much better to put the seed straight in the ground and let things happen. But if you've germinated the seed, just get them very, very gently before the seed probably is more than the little roots. Get them before they're probably more than about a centimetre long. And that way you're less likely to do damage. And you plant them so that the actual seed itself will be maybe a centimetre below the surface. But so you've got to dig a little hole and put the root system in there gently, so and put the soil around it gently, so that the seed is sitting there beneath the soil, and eventually from the seed itself, it'll send up a little coleoptile and a little branch system, leaf systems, and away you go.
Great. So the actual little sprout should go down the bottom and the non-sprouting bit up the top.
Absolutely, yeah. Otherwise you're
okay,
in trouble,
thank
Kim.
So much.
Thanks, Sue. Good luck. Hope you get lots of potatoes. I haven't given away the two Gardening Australia magazines, so if you've not won anything from ABC Radio Adelaide or local radio across South Australia and Broken Hill in the last month, we'll give one away by phone, 1300 222 891, and one away by text if you could put your full name and postal address to 046 7922 891. And I think we've got one more call this morning, which is from Ranji in St Peter's about a lemon tree. Welcome, Ranji.
Yeah, hello. Hi, John.
Good morning to you, and welcome to Talkback Gardening.
Thank you. My question is about our Lisbon lemon tree. We've had really good yield from that nice, big, juicy lemon still last year. This year, a month or two ago, I noticed there was this white coating on the surface of the green lemons before they became ripe. So I wasn't quite sure what it is. I cut off all the affected lemons and left what was seemingly normal on the trees. But when they became ripe and we plucked them, they seem a lot lighter than the normal lemons. And when you cut through, they're actually completely dry inside.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds like the white material that's on the surface of the lemons. Does it look like a powder, or does it look like it's like a jelly material? And if you touch it,
no, it's like a powder, but you can't scrape it off.
Yes. Okay, so it's a form of a powdery mildew or one of the fungal diseases. And so when you say you cut the oranges open, they're dry inside.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That could be two different things happening there, I think, Ravi. The fact that you've got a fungal disease on the surface is probably not causing too much of a problem, but there's something that's happened some months ago that's probably the root system has dried out temporarily, or there's been a damage to in a container. It's very, very hard to have even moisture, and if you have too much water, you damage some of the roots. If it dries out, you also have damaged roots. So I think what to do, the important thing now is to make sure the soil remains moist, not wet, give it, look after the soil, stimulate the soil with a seaweed extract and one of the soil stimulants and water that into the system now. Repeat that in late winter, probably in early spring or late winter. I'd be putting on a fungicide. Probably one of the copper sprays. Liquid copper is very, very effective. But spray the plants. It'll be flowering then, but you can put the copper spray on and it won't affect the flowers. And I think if there's a problem there in terms of fungal diseases on the skin, a copper spray early in the season should overcome that particular problem. If you get white material turning up later in the season, probably using another fungicide spray, probably copper again could be used.
Thank you for your call, Ranji. In fact, thank you to everybody who has called in to Talkback Gardening this morning or sent through texts. Congratulations to our ABC Gardening Australia magazine winners, Janelle in Strathalbyn and Mary in Klemzig. We will send those out to you and you'll get them next week. In relation to Darren Ray's forecast, Di says, oh no, not what us farmers need to hear. Let the cloud seeders do their work and seed the clouds as they come over. There's still plenty of moisture where it's flooding up north and east of our country. Send it this way. I think many people would agree with that, Di. If only we could do that. And coming back to Peter Bennett again, Jan says he was my father's guru of gardening. He had a small shop at Glenside that would see my father there every Saturday morning to listen to his latest findings or buy his beloved pigeon manure, some of which came from the Scotch College roof of their main building. He was certainly ahead of his time. And thank you very much to Kenneth Unley, also saying Peter Bennett set our garden up for life. From veggies to fruit trees and natives using organic techniques, his book is still my gardening Bible. Anya.
That's very nice to hear, and I'd say hear, hear to many of those comments, and it would be interesting maybe to recall and remember some of the people like the Peter Bennetts of this world and what they've done in horticulture over many, many years. It's something I might do before I step down.
Yes, well, your contribution is massive in itself, John, as well. And what are you doing this weekend, John? Although we all want rain, we haven't got it. It is great gardening weather.
Yes, I'm out there messing around with my little cuttings and things like that. Still more cuttings I want to take for next season and giving them a last organic fertiliser just to sort of get my flowering plants, the plants that are going to flower during late winter and springtime. They just need a little bit of nutrition, and I think I'll just make lots and lots of notes. Until next week, I'm not too sure who's going to be our guest. It'll be somebody important, somebody interesting. Until next week, good gardening.